All right, let's see what's on TV tonight.
Person who wins this
Survivor,
challenge will
have
no. The next...
and American Idol? No.
You're fired.
Donald Trump?
Fired.
No. All... Tennis? No. Ooh, wrestling.
Sick and tired of what's on TV these days? Try Graphic Audio! www.graphicaudio.net! Oh yeah!
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Outlanders number 5, Parallax Red. Kane stood in the doorway, bare-chested, shirt around his neck, his features set and drawn into a grim mask. Rauch gazed at Kane boldly, her eyes resting for a long time on his groin. She was curious as to whether the sight of her naked would move him at all. As she waited for a reaction, Kane gave her a glance, but saved his intense stare for Bridget.
Baptiste, we need to talk. Alone.
For a long moment, no one moved. Then, languorously, Rauch rose to her feet, made a deliberately slow show of unwrapping the towel from her hair and dropping it to the tiles. Hips swinging, her eyes on Kane, she sauntered over to the shelves and pulled down a robe. She took a provocatively long time putting it on. The words, gaudy slut, leapt unbidden into Bridget's mind, but she managed to keep them from her tongue, just barely. As Rauch padded barefoot past Kane, one of her long fingernails traced a line on his arm.
Let's do dinner. Or breakfast.
For the first time, Kane took notice of the woman, with a swift, slightly irritated flash of the eyes. They were eyes that appraised Rauch, yet were already focused on something else.
I understand DeFore expected you to talk to me about being fused out.
Bridget stared up at him, feeling his anger, but too busy wrestling with her own to address it.
Do you know why Rauch is here?
No, and I really don't care. Why didn't
She's here to mate with you, to improve the breed of Cerberus exiles.
Kane was astonished. He turned to look at the doors Rauch had just walked through.
Really? Nobody told me.
She would have gotten around to it eventually.
She told you that?
And a lot more. First, she wanted to know if you and I were involved. Not that it would make any difference to her, she told me. It's all business, though she isn't above mixing a little pleasure with it.
I don't want to talk about that. DeFore said...
Will you?
Will I what?
I hate it when you're obtuse. Answer my question.
You answer mine.
You didn't ask me one.
That's because you didn't give me the chance. DeFore told you that I was fused out.
That's not a question.
God damn it, let's stay on the subject.
Bridget lifted her feet out of the pool. She grabbed a towel and furiously began drying her hair.
Fine. I suppose it makes perfect sense, Lakesh continuing to practice his own version of purity control. It would have been polite to have briefed us on what he had in mind, but then we're just an ex-archivist and an ex-mag, exiles all.
Kane gazed at her, finally reacting to the unmistakable edge of barely repressed fury and hurt in her voice.
You're jealous. For God's sake, Baptiste, you're jealous. You're acting like a...
A woman. That's what you were going to say. I'm acting like a woman.
He shifted his feet uncomfortably.
Well, you are.
She stooped quickly to pick up the towel that Rauch had dropped, then stood again, pitched it into a hamper, and continued to dry off, all in one smooth, continuous movement. The grace of the motion gave a slight hint of the athlete's coordination within her slender frame. Kane couldn't help but gaze at her admiringly. He had seen her nude before, under other circumstances, but the brief brassiere and panties she wore struck him as arousing. His thoughts whipped back to that night months before in Cobaltville when he had first met her. He had recognized her as a truly beautiful woman then, and he recognized the same woman now. Bridget's slim body was rounded and curved, long in the leg. Her full breasts strained at the fabric of her brassiere, and the wet cloth of her panties was plastered to the soft, honey-blonde triangle at the juncture of her thighs. But she radiated a beauty far deeper than the physical, an energy that triggered a melancholy longing in his soul. That strange, sad longing only deepened after a bout of jump sickness both of them suffered during the Matt Trans jump to Russia. The main symptoms of jump sickness were vivid, almost real hallucinations. He and Bridget had shared the same hallucination, but both knew on a visceral, primal level it hadn't been gateway-triggered delirium, but a revelation that they were joined by chains of fate, their destinies linked. They never spoke of it, though Kane often wondered if that spiritual bond was the primary reason he had sacrificed everything he had attained as a magistrate to save her from execution. Kane didn't like that melancholia, so over the past 6 months he worked very hard at burying it, at rerouting all of the repressed passions he felt toward Bridget. But the melancholy filled him like a cup, and he pushed her away before the sadness overflowed to such a degree he would never be able to contain it again. A few weeks before, when Kane had protested to Morrigan that there was nothing between him and Bridget, the Irish telepath had laughed at him.
Oh, yes, there is. Between you two, there is much to forgive, much to understand, much to live through. Always together. She's your Anamkara.
In ancient Gaelic, Anamkara meant soul friend. Kane found Bridget's intelligence, her iron resolve, her wellspring of compassion, and the way she had always refused to be intimidated by him, not just stimulating, but inspiring. She was a complete person, her heart, mind, and spirit balanced and demanding of respect. Only a few days ago, when cornered by Salvo's questions about his reasons for sacrificing everything for a woman, he could think of only one clumsily phrased response.
Because I know her. Because I need her.
Bridget reached down to pick up her bodysuit, shouldering Kane aside.
I'm sorry. I have no right to give you hell about Rauch.
Well, that's for sure. Directed toward Lockesh.
I don't have the right to give it to him either. Objectively, his reasoning is sound. I have no hold over you.
Kane frowned, not liking what she said, but unable to dredge up anything to refute it. He reached a hand out toward her, but Bridget turned her back and stepped into the bodysuit.
Defoe did mention to me that she was worried about your emotional stability. The coma you suffered after the Irish op threw a scare into her. She's afraid you'll develop a full-blown psychosis. She interpreted your insistence on taking Salvo with us to New York as evidence of that. She thinks that was the reason the mission failed.
She might be right. Maybe my instincts can't be trusted anymore.
If the mission to change history failed, it had nothing to do with your instincts or Salvo. We gained important data from it. We now know the true purpose behind Operation Kronos.
Why didn't you tell me about DeFore's worries when I first suggested bringing Salvo along?
Bridget's green eyes gleamed strangely in the dim light.
What good would it have done, except make you doubt yourself? She doesn't know you. Doesn't know that you're at your best when faced with seemingly impossible challenges.
And you know that?
I do. Defoe thinks you have a deluded self-image, that you believe yourself to be a Superman, glorying in your power over life or death.
I seem to recall you saying much the same thing on occasion.
I was referring to your magistrate's persona. I can see beneath it.
And what's there, Baptiste?
A lonely and frightened man who was doing a job that needs doing. That doesn't make you fused out, Kane. It makes you human. I just saw no reason to mention that DeFore diagnosed you as human.
Kane swallowed the hot lump swelling in his throat, felt his heart thud within his chest. He felt the familiar longing ache and tried to bottle it. Bridget stepped around him toward the doors.
Baptiste?
Yes?
You were wrong about one thing.
What's that?
About your having no hold over me.
Bridget said nothing, but inclined her head in a short nod.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.